You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. Help support your local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Official partner of the NFL. And we are back here on our Locked On Ravens midweek edition with Cole Jackson of Russell Street Report, who is here to answer your questions as well as get into a game recap of the Ravens 31-17 victory over the Washington football team. Cole, it's a good victory week here this week for the Baltimore Ravens. How are you feeling this week?
We're back in the win column. I was just talking on Twitter with a couple people about how high this team has set our expectations, where it just doesn't feel the same even though we win 31-17. It still just didn't feel like that dominant of a win, and it really speaks to how spoiled we got, including myself last year during the regular season when we were just kind of blowing teams out and moving the ball with ease. And I think it's been a good reality check for me. I don't mean to sound pessimistic, because I'm certainly not down on the team. I mean, they're looking very good. They have one of the best point differentials in the league right now. And, routinely beating teams easily. I don't miss those days where we'd be sweating out close wins, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And even factoring in that Kansas City loss, the Ravens are still outscoring their opponents by 12.25 points per game. That's almost two touchdowns. So, yes, they're not putting up 40 points every single week. They're not blowing teams up by 30. But they're getting wins. And that's really all that matters. It doesn't matter if you win by one. It doesn't matter if you win by 30. A win is a win. Go 1-0 every single week. But, Cole, I want to start off here in this first segment by just getting your overall thoughts on the game against Washington for Baltimore. And I want to start off with Lamar Jackson, who finished this game 14 of 21 for 193 yards passing with two touchdowns. And that semi-costly interception at the end of the half, he also contributed 53 rushing yards on seven carries with that 50-yard scamper for a touchdown. What did you like and what didn't you like from Lamar Jackson's performance on Sunday?
Well, one thing I did like is how Lamar Jackson really settled in as the game went on. He was a little all over the place to start the game. And you know, I remember back when in the Flacco days when we would go out and we'd get the ball running and kind of get the ground game going, and it really seemed to help settle in Joe Flacco. And I mean, it's kind of an obvious comment, because any team, their quarterback's going to settle in when they're running the ball. It takes off pressure. It opens up play calling. But what I've noticed with Lamar Jackson, he settles in even more so when he's the one that makes the plays with his legs. And so the real difference for me in Lamar's game was after his 50-yard touchdown run, he started throwing the ball better. And I think when he's spent so much of his career, being electrifying with his legs, I think it just gives him the confidence. And I think we saw that. I mean, some of his throws on the run from this game, there was the almost touchdown throw to Marquise Brown, where he was down at just the 1 yard line and set up the Mark Ingram touchdown run. And there was the Mark Andrews touchdown where he came across the field, and both of those throws were on the run. That was one of the biggest areas. And this is the thing with Lamar Jackson, for someone that gets called a running quarterback or, you know, a running back who can throw, he never threw very well while he was on the run. He threw better from the pocket. And now we're seeing some of that development where he's getting the ball out cleanly on the run. And I think it's been one of the big differences I've noticed this year. And it was on display in this game. Those strikes to Andrews and to Marquise Brown were perfectly placed. And they were both on the run. And the one from Marquise Brown was across his body. And that's a tough throw to make. So, I mean, the stats are what the stats are. You'll never hear me go on too much about passing yards. I'm not, I don't think passing yards are indicative of a good quarterback. I want to see efficiency. And, you know, he threw the ball at a 66% clip. he had some off throws, but he settled in, and that's what matters. And there was that one incompletion where he got Marquise Brown over the top and it just went through his fingertips. But I actually agreed with the commentary team during the game. The ball couldn't have been placed any better. It was in double coverage, and you know, Marquise Brown had a shot at it. So if we start seeing those two connect on the deep ball, because that's actually been one of my criticisms so far, is that Marquise Brown is getting a step on DBs and he's getting that separation for the deep ball, and Lamar is just not hitting it to him. So if they start to connect on those, I mean, that is going to be an electrifying connection. And some of that's going to come down to timing. Some of it's going to come down to chemistry now that Lamar's getting used to a 100% foot of Marquise Brown. And you can see the speed. I mean, he flies out there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you want to talk about passing yards. Yeah, they're not a stat that really indicates how good of a quarterback a player is. I mean, for Lamar Jackson, I think a lot of people knew that he was going to have a box score drop-off from what he did in 2019. It was spectacular what he did in 2019. But just some of the stats that Lamar Jackson has accumulated over these first 4 weeks during the 2020 season. Among all quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson ranks number 4 in catchable pass rate, number 5 in clean pocket completion percentage. He ranks number 7 in both play-action completion percentage and red zone completion percentage. So he's doing things. He's placing the ball in catchable places. You mentioned that one Marquise Brown throw that he didn't catch it, but it was right in the breadbasket for him to catch it. He's doing phenomenal things this year. No, he has not been perfect. Yes, there is room for improvement, but he has still been a great NFL quarterback this season. But Cole, I want to talk to you next about your bread and butter, and that is the offensive line, which they saw a big change going into this game against Washington, where Ronnie Stanley is inactive. So what the Ravens decided to do is move Orlando Brown from right tackle to left tackle and put DJ Fluker in that right tackle position. And I think this combination actually worked out pretty well for Baltimore. What was your overall evaluation of how the offensive line played?
Well, I want to say that I'm very happy with the fact that they made that change before the game. I've always said that it's a lot harder to move a guy in the game. So, you know, if you lose, it happened in week one, actually. Let's go back to week one. Ronnie Stanley goes down, and instead of seeing Brown slide over and Fluker insert at right tackle, they put Fluker right in at left tackle. And I think it's a big deal to make that change in game. But when you do it pregame, Brown Jr. can settle into that from the start of the game. So I think that's important. And also the preparation is important. Just who he's looking at. This Washington team, they don't really play strong side of the field on the D-line. So they the way you film prep for the guy that you're going to probably see more often than not, that changes your approach to the game. So now, how did he do? Orlando Brown Jr. had his best game of the year at left tackle. And it's not necessarily that I was surprised. I'm a big Brown Jr. fan, and I've been pretty harsh on him to start the year, but that's just because my expectations are sky high. I really think he's got that all-pro potential at right tackle. We know he played left tackle at Oklahoma, and that Oklahoma offense, what he was asked to do, he was asked to do some athletic things. And even though he gets branded as a non-athletic player, he has become one of the best in the business at using his technique, using his length, using his anticipation, the timing of his punch, all of those things to mask that athletic limitation. And it was on full display in this game. Yes, he didn't see Chase Young. I don't think it changes a whole lot. I think Orlando Brown would be ready for it. So I thought he played phenomenal, and I'll give credit to DJ Fluker. What a game from him. I thought the Ravens did a really good job of calling plays that play to his strength. They asked him to down block a lot. They ran powers to the right, and he mauled some guys from right tackle. Like he mauled some guys. So I was happy with not only his play, but I was happy with what Greg Roman did to help him out and put him in a position to succeed. And I said before the game, I don't want to see any empty sets, but even they did run a few, and I thought he held up in pass pro. And, you know, maybe he's more comfortable on the right side. He did play right guard. He did play right tackle when he was with the Chargers. You know, maybe he's just not comfortable at the left side for technical reasons. Even just the way you set your feet changes. So, you know, if we have to go into a couple of games where we're without Ronnie Stanley, I have a lot more confidence that that combination of Brown at left tackle, Fluker at right tackle, can get it done. So I think from, you know, staring at the offensive line constantly, this was a big confidence boost for me. We still had some issues on the interior. I thought Tyree Phillips played phenomenal against Kansas City. And when I went back and did a rewatch after you and I recorded last week, my opinion of him just went up. This was a bit of a setback. He struggled. He saw Payne, can't think of his first name, Payne from Washington the most. Again, what I mentioned, they don't switch sides. So Payne was lining up at left defensive tackle and Jonathan Allen at right defensive tackle. So Bradley Bozeman had a phenomenal game. Not a whole lot to say there, but Phillips struggled in this one. There was a play where he ended up actually running backwards and chasing his guy, and that's just a no-no at any level in football. You're always coaching your guys to keep moving forward, and if they get by you, you let them go and you find someone else in front of you. So it looks to me he's really struggling with the overthinking. He's overextending again. He is doing a better job moving his feet, so that's an area of improvement. Me and one of my film guys, Michael Crawford, that I always talk with, we've noticed it. He's refining his stride length out of his pass pro, and he's taking those shorter, choppier steps that I'm always talking about. And so you're seeing that evolution happen, and that's good to see. Now, as for what to do with him moving forward, I think we might get into it later. I'm not ready to pull the plug on him. I'm not ready to pull the plug on Matt Scurry yet. You got to give them a few weeks, and we got to go back to 2019 and look at Bradley Bozeman, who's really developed as a player. But going into that Seattle Seahawks game last year, he was struggling. And I remember saying if he had a bad game, because our bye week was right after that, and then we came out against the Patriots, if he would have struggled against Seattle, I think they may have made a move at the bye week and brought someone else in, such as Ben Powers, to play left guard. But, you know, Bozeman played well against Seattle, and then, you know, he had the bye week and he took off the rest of the year and played really well. So, you know, we got to give them time. 4 weeks isn't enough to say, okay, this is it. And that's not even factoring the fact that we didn't have a preseason or a normal training camp. So, you know, I don't think they're playing at a top 10 caliber right now, but the potential is there, and I want to give them time to kind of gel.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, for this offensive line, there was going to be some sort of drop-off because the loss of Marshall Yanda is just so massive, and you're going in and replacing him with that rookie right guard who played tackle in college. So there's going to be some drop-off. You have to give him a few weeks, and I totally agree with that. But I thought that the tackles in Fluker and Brown did play really, really well in the absence of Stanley. But finally, quickly here, Cole, before we head into our first break, I wanted to get your overall thoughts on how this defense performed against Dwayne Haskins and company. The pass rush unit was able to get 3 sacks. There was a forced fumble by Marlon Humphrey that was picked up by Marcus Peters. Patrick Queen led this team with 12 total tackles. What were your overall impressions by the defense?
I thought Patrick Queen played phenomenal. You know, he had that play where he jumped up at the line and knocked down the running back trying to jump over. That's a pro play right there. So it was cool to see him do that. The biggest thing that impressed me with Patrick Queen is he had a down game against the Chiefs. The Chiefs picked on him, and the Ravens ended up pulling him. And, you know, sometimes that confidence can really get a player down. But, you know, he came out, he held his head up high, and he stacked together a good performance. So seeing that type of and I mean, remember, Patrick Queen's only 21 years old. He's a young kid. It's easy when you're that young to get overwhelmed. But I mean, talk about stepping up. Good on him. So that's phenomenal to see. I found that the way the defense played was weird to me. And what I'm mostly referring to is their pass coverage. They seemed okay letting Washington get away with some of their passes from their DBs, and they just kind of kept the play in front of them. Haskins moved the ball pretty well. He moved the ball pretty efficiently, but no scores, and they kind of did the whole bend but not break in the red zone. So that was something that surprised me. The big mess that I saw was the screens. The screens were insane. Like, I've never seen a team, you know, just able to run screens over and over and over again. It was like watching someone play Madden, and we just didn't know how to stop them. So that's something to watch. Kansas City beat us up with them. And you know, any team, like, we're going to see Joe Mixon on some screens. We're going to see them try and get the ball in Tyler Boyd's hands behind the line of scrimmage. So if that's not something they can fix, it's going to be a nightmare to deal with all year. So, you know, there were some ups and downs. I thought the run defense came together a little bit better this year or this week. So that was good to see. But those screens were just a nightmare.
Yeah, again, over and over and over again. It was just constant chunk plays on these screens for Washington. So credit to them. They saw something that was working. The Ravens couldn't make the adjustments, and Washington beat the Ravens down with it. Now, they didn't get the win, but it still makes a lot of sense to do it over and over if it works. So hopefully the Ravens will be able to kind of clean that up over the next few weeks. But we're going to head into our first break here, and when we get back, we're going to be answering your mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. The improved Built Bar is even more delicious with 6 new flavors that include caramel, briny, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. They're also healthy. They're great for the health conscious person who can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. So be sure to go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. And we are back with our second segment of this Locked On Ravens midweek edition episode. Your host, Kevin Allstriker, still here with Cole Jackson. And Cole, as we dive into these mailbag questions now, I want to start off with a question from Hugh Nunn. And he says that Matthew Judon went off for his first two sacks and several quarterback hits against a lesser team. And it's also noted that he's disappeared against stronger teams. So, Cole, do you see this as a scheme or an individual effort? And now that he's tagged for this season, what do you ultimately think happens to him next year?
Well, the only thing on Matt Judon, he played very well against Houston. He led the team with 6 pressures in that game. And, you know, he had a better game here in terms of pass rushing production. But, you know, this is the thing. It's always like, what's better, a pressure or a sack? And, you know, it's obviously you want the sack. Every play you want a sack. Of course you do. But consistent pressure is important. And Matt Judon did that against the Texans. So, and the Texans are a good team, even though they're 0-4 right now. You know, they have a top 5, top 6 quarterback at the helm, and you know they can beat you. So I thought he played well in that game. You know, the Kansas City game wasn't great. There was some ups and downs. As for his contract status, I just don't see how they can afford to pay him. And the reason I say that is because they have other guys they have to pay. And so we just saw Marlon Humphrey get his bag and get that long-term deal, and phenomenal structure by Raven salary cap on Twitter just dropped the details today. The structure is phenomenal. Eric DaCosta continues to knock it out of the park with how he's structuring deals, which was always a weakness of Ozzie Newsome. So it was good to see that, but I just don't know how they afford him. They got to pay Stanley. They're going to have to pay Lamar in a few years. There's Orlando Brown you might want to pay. There is Marquise Brown coming up. Mark Andrews. Like there's guys that got to get paid, and I'm not sure if Judon's going to be worth what they can pay him. And so he's a versatile player. They're able to do different things with him, and he fits Wink Martindale in that sense. But what I think I'd like to see them do the rest of the year with Matt Judon is just, you know, maybe simplify it for him a little bit, maybe let him get his hand in the dirt a little bit more like he did in college and get after the quarterback. I know he can do it. We've seen him do it, and we've seen him get consistent pressure. A lot of people keep saying he doesn't get consistent pressure. I don't think the tape supports that. I think he's had a couple of down games and people use that against him, but to say he didn't get consistent pressure last year, it's just not true. That's not what the film says. It's not what the pressure stats say. People love sacks, and you know, he's not going to put up double digits consistently, so that might not be worth the money to you, but you know, you also got to look at the pressure stats too.
Yeah, absolutely. This is such a sack-driven league where it's, oh, well, if you're not getting the quarterback down, then what are you doing? You know, Judon can drop in coverage. He can set the edge well. He does a lot of great things, but he's going to be asking for elite pass rusher money. And while he does get pressure on the quarterback, are the Ravens going to pay him that money? Again, Cole, I agree. I don't think so. The Ravens just have too many other guys, and they're going to have to take a loss somewhere. And ultimately, I think that guy is Matthew Judon. But our next question comes from Caitlin Hutchinson, and he asks, was the Marlon Humphrey extension overdue, a morale boost, or more of a salary cap move to bring someone in?
Well, I don't think it was a salary cap move to leave some or to bring someone in. Again, you could check out the structure that just came out today. I think they either stayed neutral in terms of 2019 cap dollars, or they actually lost some. I've got to double check Brian's tweet, but they didn't gain cap room this year. I think what we saw them make some moves leading up to this, where I think that they were trying to create a little bit of cap space, and I think they were able to add a little. I'm pretty sure they added more this year. So I think that might have been what they were thinking. You know, we'll create a little bit of room. We all thought it was for signing, and it looks like they rolled that into his contract. Was it overdue? These things can be tough to figure out. I know they were waiting for some of the other balls to drop, such as Trey White getting his money, Jalen Ramsey getting his money. I think a lot of, like, we all knew he was getting signed. I would have been floored if he ended up not getting that extension. So sometimes it's just fickle details. And I remember it came out that his agent and Moriarty were up till 2 a.m. working out the finals around the deal. So this is a big contract. There's a lot of moving pieces in these contracts where you're getting top of your position money. So, you know, sometimes they take a little bit longer, but you almost know it's getting done, so you're not too worried about it. Humphrey came out and had a phenomenal game coming off that, and had that forced fumble, which he's just, I've never seen a DB be able to punch, well, I shouldn't say a DB, I've never seen a corner be able to punch the ball out quite like Humphrey can. So it's crazy to see that him continue to do it. So, you know, it could have been a bit of a morale boost, but I honestly think this has been in the works for a long time. They were just waiting for whatever logistical detail to kind of get wrapped up.
Yeah, and I mean, again, I would have probably been floored as well, Cole, if Humphrey didn't get that extension. But when you look at this, is it a morale boost? It's definitely not a salary cap thing. But, you know, you could argue it was overdue, but he still would have been under contract. They would have exercised that team option for his fifth year, the fifth year option. So they already did it, actually. So he would have still been under contract. There would have been more time to negotiate. I just think the pieces all came together at once. But our next question comes from Atavio Moeller, and he asks, Cole, do you think the amount of pressure that Lamar Jackson is seeming to have to be getting right now, do you think that's exacerbated by the high number of bootlegs and rollouts that he's been kind of doing this season? Do you think that Baltimore's doing too much with Jackson and that he could maybe simplify, Greg Roman could maybe simplify the playbook?
I got to say, Otavio, you've asked me a ton of questions. You're one of my favorite followers, so thanks for listening in and asking those questions, because you get into the nitty-gritty, and I love it. So I personally hate, from a schematic point of view, I hate rollouts. I always have. They shrink the field. You know, they do play to the strength of a mobile quarterback who can run, because obviously if you catch the defense off guard, then it creates field for you to run into. So from that aspect, I've always understood why they do it with Lamar. That's more on the bootleg front. I hate rollouts in general, just because, again, it shrinks the field, or else you're throwing back across your body. So usually you see rollouts work when they're designed for one specific route on that option. And we actually saw it against Kansas City when they did the it was 3rd and 3 on Kansas City's 8 at the on the first drive, where they kicked a field goal and Lamar rolled out to the right, and it was supposed to be a pick route that Boykin didn't set well, and Willie Snead didn't run the out to get that ball for the first down, and it ended up having a gain of 0 on the play. So it's if they're running it for one route and it's against zone, I'm kind of okay with it. But we've seen rollouts run with Joe Flacco where, you know, there's just nothing there and he doesn't have the legs to do it. So generally speaking, I don't like them. The bootlegs, I've found they really struggled to block. There was that bootleg against Houston where J.J. Watt had his first sack of 2 on the day. And, you know, they just don't seem to be working, and the defense hasn't seemed fooled by them. So, you know, is that Greg Roman trying to do too much? I actually think he's trying to use the play action to help out the offensive line and keep the defense off kilter, but we're not running the ball effectively enough right now to be able to do that. And so that's where I think it's not working. It seems like Greg Roman kind of has that game script in mind where we can, you know, run and get those chunk yards on the ground and then set up the play action. And I think he's trying to do that, but it's not really working out as planned because they're not running the ball effectively. So, you know, the defensive line isn't adjusting to the run, and then you're getting that space to throw. So I think that's a good catch. I think it's something they're struggling with, and, you know, they kind of have to get off the play action until they're running the ball more effectively. Cause like I said, I've noticed the defensive ends crashing down on Lamar at the mesh point more often. And, you know, if they're going to continue to do that, then the play action isn't going to fool them because they've already sold on going at Lamar. So something to keep an eye on for sure.
part of what makes the pass game so effective is the run game. You have to establish it. And part of what made the 2019 offense so deadly for Baltimore was that it was a constant guessing game. You had guys who were undisciplined because they just didn't know if the ball was going to go to Mark Ingram, if it was going to be a Lamar Jackson on a bootleg, or if he was going to pull the ball out of the belly and pass the football. You had guys crashing down. You had guys kind of setting the edge, and they were doing the wrong assignment, so it led to chunk plays, but it doesn't seem like that's been happening a ton. It seems like the offenses have figured out. I just think they have to readjust just a little tiny bit. But finally here, Cole, before we head into our final break, Benny has two things he wants to ask. One, what seems to be the problem with Miles Boykin? Is it a chemistry issue with Lamar Jackson, proper utilization, etc.? And two, why does the defense seem to react so slowly to the screen game?
So I think with Miles Boykin, one thing I haven't liked is some of the routes there. Well, and I shouldn't say that because, I mean, we've seen him catch at a high clip. I think he's got one of the highest catch rates on the team. It's either him or Snead. And a lot of those came on crossing routes. And I think that's something Miles Boykin does well because he's got that top end speed. So he's able to get to that gear and outrun guys, especially against zone, which we see a lot. And it also means he's not breaking as much because he's running those rounded crossing routes. So the thing that I don't like is, you know, we've seen a couple of ugly routes from Miles Boykin, and they keep coming on these out routes. And he just, I mean, we had, there was a pick against the, pick against Pittsburgh last year. There was a pick in this game. There was the out route against Cleveland at the goal line where he got around too late and the ball went off his fingertips. Like, it's just not working. I don't think it's a huge strength of his game, and I'm surprised they keep going to it. I think I'd like to see them, you know, try and get him deep a little bit. He did have one deep target that Lamar wasn't anywhere near him in this game. I don't think I've seen him targeted on one post route. Now, that could make sense because we do see a lot of cover one, but we also have seen some cover two this year. And so I if you're going to see cover two, that's a good time to run that post route and get it in between the safeties. So, you know, I don't think this is the thing. They're using him well in the sense that they're getting those crossing routes in his hands because I think those are good routes for him, but they keep going to that out route. So those struggles, at least on those two plays that I mentioned this year, those are examples of poor utilization. But, you know, he does have a high catch rate. I think he's on track for 40 catches, 440-ish yards. They aren't the numbers we all want. We all know we wanted kind of that starting caliber X receiver. But, you know, he can be efficient in this offense. I'd like to see them try and get him on a little bit deeper where he doesn't have to make as drastic of cuts as you see on an out route or a comeback or, you know, something like that. You know, get him on nine routes, get him on posts, get him on corners. You know, try and get him on a fade in the end zone rather than throwing that out route against Cleveland. Why not get the ball up in the air and try and let him use his size to outmuscle a guy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that for the Ravens, they have to use him in a better way, but it's not necessarily his talent. It's just the utilization factor for me. But we're going to head into our final break now, and when we get back, we're going to be getting into more of your mailbag questions, so stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. And we are back with our final segment of this midweek edition episode. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Cole Jackson. And Cole, as we get into these final mailbag questions here, I want to start with Eric Clark. And we just talked about Miles Boykin, so let's talk about him again. He asks, when will the Ravens stop having Miles Boykin run those out routes?
That's a good question. I just addressed it. So I won't drag it out too much. Hopefully soon. And hopefully again, I want to see those post routes. I want to see those corner routes, goal line fades, that sort of stuff. I completely agree with you. I'm tired of seeing it. It doesn't seem to be working. Maybe it's something he can develop throughout this year. If they can get him getting, you know, deeper and guys are going to play off coverage, maybe you could see them go to it there. If they are going to run it, I will say, because that play was against cover three and the DB was backing off of him. So naturally, if you're backing off of an out route, you're going to cut underneath. I can't say the word route tonight. Under an out route, you would think it would be there, but you know, the ball was kind of overthrown. That's something I haven't seen many people talk about, but it doesn't change the fact that Boykin was slower around to get to the ball. And you know, if he's able to make a play on the ball, even if it's not a catch, even if it's an attempted catch, the DB is more, you know, trying to swat the ball rather than catch it. So, you know, I think that wasn't talked about enough with that specific play. Lamar placed the ball poorly, in my opinion. There was also pressure from a delayed linebacker blitz, so the ball may have come out sooner than normal. But even if you're getting that ball out sooner, you would naturally want it thrown shorter so that if it's a throwaway and you know Boykin's not going to be around enough, it's not near the defender. So I think that play is actually a good one to look at, because that's what you'd want to see against cover three, and that's where we struggled in the playoffs last year against the Titans. They were just dropping their corners to take away the deep stuff, and we couldn't get the ball to the sideline effectively. So I think it's a good one to take a look at. Again, it's something I really want to see him develop, so let's hope that he can develop it moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. And Miles Boykin's development is something that, at least I think, is a huge part to this offense's success. And if he is able to develop those things, I think it's going to not only benefit him, but obviously the whole Ravens offense. Well, our next question here comes from Brendan Ward. And Brendan asks, do you think that the inconsistency in the run game is primarily stemming from the running back's inability to get into a rhythm due to the lack of carries, or the effect of the offensive line still kind of gaining familiarity as a new unit without Marshall Yanda?
It's a good question. I definitely think it's more on the offensive line than on the rhythm piece. We saw Mark Ingram work in a committee with Alvin Kamara where they were basically spelling each other out series by series. You'd see one series Ingram, one series Kamara. Sometimes, obviously, mid-series you'd see them swap, but that was normally what it looked like. So that was one thing I liked when we brought Mark Ingram in, because he's not a rhythm runner. He was able to kind of come in and provide a change of pace, even though he is a late lead back. And we saw him work really well with Gus Edwards last year, and they didn't seem to need to get into a rhythm. So for those two guys, I don't necessarily think it's lack of getting into a rhythm. I think it's more run blocking. Now, J.K. Dobbins is a little bit of a different case just because we don't have that kind of NFL history on him. He was primarily the back at Ohio State in his last 2 years. So, you know, does he need to get into a rhythm? There's definitely an argument for it. I don't have the evidence to say yes or no to it. But at least with Ingram and Edwards, I think last year's enough to say that they don't necessarily need to get into a rhythm. But I do completely agree with you that it is a factor for some running backs. I just don't think Mark Ingram has shown that in his career. I think he's shown that he can work in a committee. And I think Gus Edwards showed that last year, too.
Yeah, again, Marshall Yanda, huge loss. Huge, huge loss. You can't understate it. The running backs on this roster are so talented. I mean, even if you factor in Justice Hill, who hasn't gotten run at the running back position this year, you have four talented runners who can do a lot for this offense. But our next question here comes from Wasim, and he asks, what are some dependable pass rushers the Ravens could trade for? He says Baltimore needs to be able to get home with four. So, Cole, who are some guys that you have on your mind for the Ravens as potential trade targets for pass rushers?
So I think the big guy I would look at is, I mean, his name gets brought up in Ravens circles almost every year. It's got to be Ryan Kerrigan. I don't know if he's available in Washington, but he is behind quite a few guys. I mean, we saw it this week. Montez Sweet's developing. They have Chase Young. They have Ryan Anderson. They have a bunch of guys that can play on their edge, so he's not getting the full snaps. He could be looking for a change of scenery. It was funny, we were just talking about the potential of trying different four-man line combinations in a Twitter chat group I'm in, and it is something I'd like to see them try and do, because you know, they could take a bit of a different approach. They could look at more of a 4-3 base with a different setup, and they could look for more of a D end rather than an outside linebacker. So, I mean, this is a big name to throw out there. I'm not saying he's available, but if Houston, we just saw them fire O'Brien, maybe JJ Watt's available. I don't know. That's a big reach. If he was somehow available, could you imagine a line of Watt, Campbell, Judon, and then Wolf and Matabike? Like, that's a four-man rush line that, you know, it's not your typical speed rushing line, but I think they could do some very interesting things, especially on stunts, because that's what Campbell and Watt are so good at. Again, that's kind of what's my pie in the sky dream. But if he was somehow available, and Houston could be going through some rebuilding with the way their season has started. So, you know, maybe he's there. I don't know. I don't even know if the money works. Again, I always say I just throw scenarios out there, and then the smarter people that know the money can tell me if I'm right or wrong. But if it was possible, that's the kind of combination I think you'd want.
That'd be a mammoth of a defensive line. I actually think J.J. Watt's deal is now non-guaranteed over the last 2 years. I think. Don't quote me, but that's what I think. So if that was a possibility, I'd be all in on that scenario. But our final question here, Cole, it comes from Shaka, and they ask, something didn't look and feel right even with this blowout win. And again, I think this is just a scenario of people who are watching the Ravens, who have watched the Ravens at least for the last year, I'd hope, and see the Ravens putting up 40 points and 30 points consistently in a dominant defense in 2019, and having them say, well, we're not winning by that much. So if the Ravens aren't winning by that much, obviously something is wrong. So Cole, do you think that's a case of Ravens fans, for lack of a better term, being spoiled, or do you think that something else is going on, something bigger?
Yeah, absolutely on the spoiled part. And that goes for myself. And I mean, I've been pretty honest about it. I led off the show with it. You know, I left this game feeling not very satisfied. And then you look at the score and it's 31-17. And it's like, what aren't you happy about? I think it's because of the expectations. Expectations are a fickle thing. I wrote about it in my grades article this week. My expectations were higher. And I think we have to remember that, you know, we might be seeing the offense regress, but the bar of what that regression was so high. And so, you know, naturally we were a record setting rush offense. Was it possible that they could come in and, you know, reset their own record? Of course it was, but was that to be expected? I'm not sure that's a fair expectation. I mean, it's record setting for a reason. So I do think some of it comes down, not even to being spoiled. I think it's just to our expectations. You know, the important thing is we're beating the teams we should beat. The Kansas City game was disappointing. You won't hear an argument from me there, but keep beating the teams you can beat, get in the postseason and make it happen. That's all. That's where my bar is this year. From now on, let's get into the postseason and let's win the postseason. You know, regular season is whatever. Just, you know, make sure you do enough to get in the playoffs. That's really all I care about at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it's a bad thing to have high expectations, especially coming off a season like the Ravens had in 2019. But yes, you know, the wins don't feel as dominant, but that doesn't necessarily mean that things are going wrong. Yes, this 2020 team isn't perfect. But again, there was not a lot of offseason time. There was no preseason. The team is still gelling. So I think as we get further and further into the season, those wins, when the Ravens do win, will start to feel a little bit better. But Cole, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the show and answering questions with me. And when we get back next week, hopefully the Ravens are 4-1 and in the driver's seat in the AFC North.
Time to beat the Bengals, go on to Joey Burrow and see what he can do. I love watching this kid play, so I'm actually excited for this week, even though it is the Bengals. And I think, you know, I think some of us had this marked down as an easy W on the calendar when it came out, but you know, Burrow can move the ball in the air, and he's exciting to watch. I'll give him that. So I'm looking forward to this one.
Absolutely. Pressure is going to be the name of the game in that Cincinnati game. But that's all that we have for you today. When we get back tomorrow, it's, of course, more Ravens talk. We'll be getting in to Crossover Thursday with Locked On Bengals. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.